All right, tonight we're in Genesis chapter 29. We're going to look at Genesis 29, verse by verse, studying it, getting a lot of good insight out of it. As we normally do, we're going to look at this chapter three ways. First, we're going to overview it, and then secondly, we're going to outline it together, and then we'll study it verse by verse in-depthly. So let's begin by overviewing this chapter. Jacob, after a long journey, arrived at a covered well where there were some shepherds and their flocks hanging out. We're told that these shepherds and their flocks were all hanging out there because they needed to wait for other shepherds in order to help them roll away the stone so they can water their sheep. Jacob began asking these shepherds some questions. First he asked, "Hey, where are you guys from?" They responded, "Haran." Jacob then asked, "Do you guys know Laban, Nahor's son?" They responded, "Yeah, we know him." Jacob asked, "Well, how's he doing? Is he well?" The shepherds replied, "He's doing well. And as a matter of fact, here comes his daughter Rachel with her father's sheep." When Jacob heard this and saw Rachel coming, he told the shepherds, "Hey, it's still early. Water your sheep and go let them feed. Go let them eat." The shepherds replied, "We can't. We have to wait for everyone else." Now, while they were still talking, Rachel at this time walked up. When Jacob saw Rachel walk up, he walked over to the well by himself, rolled away the stone, then he went over and kissed Rachel and began weeping and telling her that he was her relative. When Rachel heard this, she at once ran home and told her dad. Now, Laban ran back out, not mad, but excited, and invited Jacob to come home with them. Jacob ended up staying at Laban's house for about a month, helping out. And when the month was over, Laban asked Jacob, "What do you want me to start paying you for working for me?" Jacob replied, "Well, I'll work 7 years as a dowry for your daughter Rachel." Laban agreed to Jacob's offer. Jacob went to work, and because of his great love for Rachel, we're told that he served 7 years and it flew by. Well, the wedding time came. Jacob and the family feasted and celebrated. Well, at the end of the night, when the honeymoon would begin, Jacob went in with whom he thought was Rachel. When Jacob woke up in the morning, we're told that it wasn't Rachel. It was Rachel's sister, Leah, who was Rachel's older sister. Jacob wasn't happy about that, as you would probably imagine. He went to Laban and expressed his anger. Laban replied that, oh yeah, he forgot to tell him that in their country, it was not right for the younger sister to get married before the older sister. He said, "Hey, you know, the older sister has to get married first." Laban went on and said, "Listen, finish Leah's week out, her wedding week, and then you can also have Rachel as a wife." But he said, "But under one condition, you have to work 7 more years for me." So Jacob agreed, and because of that, he worked 7 more years. Now let's outline this chapter together. There are three main breaks in this chapter. First, in verses 1 through 12, we see that Jacob meets Rachel by the well. Secondly, in verses 13 through 30, we see that Jacob is deceived by his father-in-law, Laban. And then there's a third section, in verses 31 through 34, we see the beginning or the history of Jacob's family. Now, the history of Jacob's family begins in verse 31, but actually goes all the way until chapter 30, verse 24. Now, in my opinion, which doesn't really mean much, I believe that chapter 29 should have ended at verse 30, but what do I know? Anyways, we will start at verse 31 next week, and we'll follow the thought all the way in through chapter 30, because it just talked about all the kids being born, you know, in their name. And so rather than get into all that tonight, we're just going to focus on verses 1 through 30 and focus on Jacob's deception and him meeting Rachel. So let's get into this passage. Now, before we do, let me quickly set the context for you. Jacob was sent by his father Isaac and his mother both back to Paddan Aram, or Haran, to find a wife. Now, most of you know the reason why he was sent back. It wasn't because he was having that great urge just to get married. He was sent back because his brother Esau, who was a master hunter, was going to begin hunting him after his father Isaac died. He was going around telling people, "Hey, listen, I'm going to kill Jacob when dad dies." And Rebekah got word of that, and came to Jacob and said, "Okay, son, by the way, I'm going to go tell your dad you need to get out of here because your brother's going to kill you." Now, Esau wanted to kill Jacob for two reasons. Number one, he wanted to kill Jacob because Jacob stole his birthright. He deceived him for his birthright. You remember the story. There, Esau came in from the field, just weary after hunting the whole time. And Jacob, the William Sonoma kind of man, in there cooking, has some good stew. I'm sure it was like relevant to the season. It was harvest time, maybe. We don't know. But, it could have been some pumpkin-y thing or whatever, some special, how they bring out all these different stews and stuff like that. It was some special seasonal dish. And, as soon as Esau walks in, he smelled it and he's like, the fall is here. And so he wanted to eat. And Jacob said, "Okay, well, hey, sell me your birthright and I'll give you this pot of stew." And so he agreed. And then later Esau wasn't happy about that. Now, the straw that broke the camel's back and really, really, really made Esau want to kill Jacob was when Jacob deceived his father into thinking that he was actually Esau. You remember that, where he went out and got the lamb for his mom, the goat, and they put the fur on him, and he went in there and deceived his father. And so this took Esau over the edge because Jacob received the blessing from his father. And the blessing, as you remember, was the seal of approval that this is the patriarch whom God is going to bless and give the covenants and the prosperity of the nation of Israel. So because of that, Esau wanted to kill Jacob. Now in chapter 28, we saw that Jacob left and began his journey towards Haran. Well, as Jacob was on the way, he got tired, and so he stopped and took a little nap. He was going to go to sleep and stayed the night there. We're told that he had a dream, and in this dream he saw a ladder with which the angels of God were ascending and descending upon the ladder. And as we saw, the ladder was actually Jesus, whom Jesus even claimed in John chapter 1. The Father spoke to Jacob over the ladder. We're told that the Father gave Jacob the promises and the covenants which he gave to his grandfather Abraham and also to his father Isaac. And so that's where we left off. Jacob is still on this journey, and as we pick up in verse 1, we see him finally arriving at his destination. So look at verse 1 of chapter 29. "So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east." Now, it's believed that Jacob's route consisted of going north towards Assyria and then going east from there. Now, John Phillips, as well as many good evangelical commentators, say that the phrase "Jacob went on his journey" can also be rendered "Jacob lifted up his feet." They say that after Jacob had this dream, he was filled with enthusiasm or joy. As a result of that, he had a hop in his step, and he was walking his journey with excitement as a result of that dream. The same can be you and I. Same could be for you and I as we are on this journey of life, or maybe you're looking at your ministry as a journey. Paul described it as a race. Our journeys can be hard, our lives can be hard, our ministries can be hard. But the more that we, the more we see the Lord, the more we see Jesus, and the more we hear from the Father as we spend time with the Lord in devotions, it will put a hop in our step. It will give us endurance to continue to walk on our journey with joy. Jacob might have been dragging his feet, as he was going first from his house. But after he saw that vision, scholars say he had a hop in his step. Now, Paul was encouraged greatly by seeing the Lord. Paul had a hard ministry in Corinth. Now, we're reading the book of Corinthians, and we saw that God had done a great work in Corinth, but when Paul first came to Corinth, it wasn't so easy. Paul went there, and he wanted to preach to the Jews. That was his desire. He wanted to preach the gospel to the Jews. Well, he went there, and they rejected him. Paul says, "Okay, well, hey, your blood is on your own hands. I'm going to the Gentiles." He ended up going next door over and preaching to the Gentiles. Well, Paul was encouraged by the Lord. The Lord revealed himself to Paul and said, "Hey, listen, Paul, don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. There's many people in this town who are going to be saved. Just trust in me." And Paul was encouraged. And because of that, we now have the letter of 1 Corinthians, which we're really blessed by on Sunday morning. And so maybe you're discouraged on your journey right now, or whether your journey is your ministry. Hey, spend time with the Lord and be encouraged by him. And as a result, you'll have a hop in your step and others will be blessed as well. Now, the end of this verse tells us that he came to the land of the people of the east. The land of the people of the east are identified in verse 4 as the people of Paddan Aram, or Haran. This was the home of Abraham, Sarah, and Lot and Rebekah, who was Jacob's mother. Verse 2. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. When Jacob got to Haran, he discovered some local shepherds and three flocks lying by the well of water, which was in the middle of a field. Now this verse gives us insight concerning their protocol for watering their sheep in those days. We're told that all the sheep would be watered at the same time. The reason for this is they would have to wait for all the shepherds of the area to come and water the sheep. Now, three more things that we can glean from this. It shows us, number one, it was probably first come, first serve, which was probably why the shepherds were there hanging out already. You know, it could have been first come, first serve. So they're there hanging out. They're like, hey, man, we want to get in first once all the shepherds get here. Secondly, water was probably precious in that area. As you can imagine, the Middle East, somewhere like the valley, water is precious. And it's demonstrated by the fact that they had a huge stone over the well's mouth. And thirdly, the stone was probably large and heavy because they had to wait for all the shepherds to get there. Verse 4. And Jacob said to them, my brethren, where are you from? And they said, we're from Haran. Then he said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. So he said to them, is he well? They said, he is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with his sheep. Jacob began asking these local shepherds some questions. Now, notice that these guys are men of very few words. Also, it could be that they are cautious of strangers. Jacob first asked them, hey, where are you guys from? They said, we're from Haran. Okay. And then he asked them, do you know Nahor's son, Laban? They said to him, we know him. That was it. We know him. And then Jacob asked them, is he well? They said, he's well. And oh yeah, by the way, look, here comes his daughter, Rachel, walking out with her father's sheep. Now, before we move on, I want to point out that God was in control over Jacob's journey. When Jacob left Beersheba, he probably had a general idea where he was going. He probably knew, listen, my family is from the people of the east, and so therefore I need to go east. And so he probably had a general idea of where he was going. But Jacob had no control over arriving in Haran at the exact moment and at the exact spot that Rachel, his future wife, would be coming out to the well. This is God's providence. This was the Lord's hand in leading him. Oh yes, Jacob had to step out and walk towards the east. He couldn't just sit around and say, okay, God, take me there. No, he had to get out and walk, but yet the Lord was over it all leading him. This is what we call God's providence. So let's talk about this doctrine for a second. What is providence? Well, I want to give you two definitions. The first comes from a man named A.A. Hodge. He says the following concerning providence. Providence comes from the Latin, which is pro and video, meaning foresight. And by that, a careful arrangement prepared beforehand for the accomplishment of the predetermined end. Norman Geisler says the following, which is a really good quote. Geisler says, and I quote, God's providence relates to the means by which he controls his creation so as to accomplish his sovereign will for it. It speaks of his care for his creatures in bringing about his purposes. This care is both general and particular, manifested in the universe as a whole and in each part of the universe specifically. It extends on earth from the tiniest particle of matter to the principle or the pinnacle of God's creation, human beings. By God's infinite wisdom, he established a definite goal and will use the best means to achieve it. Because of his infinite goodness, he makes certain he will do the best for his creatures. And because of his infinite righteousness, he makes certain that all is governed rightly, punishing evil and rewarding good. Providence is the means by which this is executed in the universe. Providence stands between two extremes, fatalism and indeterminism. The former, which is fatalism, maintains certainty but denies freedom, while the latter, indeterminism, maintains spontaneity but denies certainty. Divine providence he said, divine providence, however, maintains both certainty and liberty. And so the teaching of God's providence lies between two balances. God is in absolute control over everything. He's sovereign. We saw that in the fact that God led Jacob where he is. But yet, on the other hand, man is free. Now, how does that work together? I have no idea. And scholars don't either. They debate about it. But the Bible teaches both. God is sovereign and man is free. We see the God's sovereignty and responsibility in Jacob's life, but we also see it in a former servant who came to the same area, maybe to even the same exact well, maybe even for the same exact purpose, who was Abraham's servant. Listen to what Abraham's servant said in Genesis 24. He said, "As for me, being on the way, the Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren." Wow, that's a great quote right there concerning providence. "I, being on the way, the Lord led me." And so he stepped out. He was walking, but yet the Lord was in total control over having that servant there meet Rebekah. For further study on God's providence, I want to recommend a very good study from Pastor Gene Pensiero. It's out of Acts 27:27 through 44. It's called Providence Driven Life. It's a very good study, and it's a study out of Acts where Paul was on this ship, as most of you remember, going to Rome. And there he was, you know, in the midst of a storm. But yet we see both sides, God's providence in bringing them, promising Paul, "Hey, listen, I'm going to bring you to a specific end." But nevertheless, there is going to be some destruction on the ship. And that gives us another illustration or example of providence. And it explains very well. So Acts 27:27 through 44, it's called Providence-Driven Life. Now, how does this apply to us as a Christian? Well, it applies to us greatly. Well, first of all, it applies to us because it gives us rest, knowing that, listen, what God desires for me in my ministry or my life is going to be accomplished. Romans 8:28, which is that famous passage that we love, "All things work together for good for those who love God." All things, even those things which are hard, even those things which are good, God is using all those things by His sovereignty to reach His specific purpose for our life. But yet, on the other hand, the Bible says, "Work out your salvation with fear and trembling." And then it goes on, "For it is God who wills to work in you, both to work for His good pleasure." And so, we're to still work out our salvation. That's not to exclude prayer. We're to still pray. Jesus said, "When you pray." And so we're to pray. We're to step out in faith. We're to be like Jonathan and his armor bearer. But yet, we're to have hope and comfort when we do it, knowing that God is going to lead us and work all things together for good. Verse 7, "Then he said, 'Look, it is still high day. It is not time for the cattle to be gathered together and water the sheep.' And then he says, 'Go and feed them.' But they said, 'We cannot until the flocks are gathered and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we will water the sheep.'" So Jacob uses some of his shepherding expertise in these verses. He tells these shepherds, "Listen, guys, it's early in the day. And why are you guys just sitting around? Just roll the stone away, water the sheep, and then, let them go out and eat. Let them go out and graze the land." And of course, they replied back with their same answer, "Listen, we can't. We have to wait for all the other shepherds to get here. Then we can water the sheep." Now, I believe Jacob did this because he cared about the sheep. He had some shepherding expertise. But I believe the real reason why Jacob did this was rooted in verse 6. Notice it says, "Once Jacob saw Rachel coming, then he automatically says, 'Hey guys, listen, water your sheep, get them out of here, go and, go out into the field.'" Jacob wanted to be alone with Rachel, Now, I find it interesting, love and romance makes people do funny things. We see examples of this in this chapter. We'll see three examples of what love and romance makes Jacob do as a result. But first, let me point out one thing. Love and romance makes you want to be alone and hang out with the other person. I find this true from my experiences of dating and being engaged with Ashley. We would have, at any time, we would have dropped any engagement or you know, other hanging out with other people just to hang out. And we did. You know, I think we hung out almost every day when we were engaged, every single day. And, you know, and you kind of exclude yourself from other people. They're like, oh, Jake's not hanging out anymore. He's not doing the same thing. Because, you know, you're in love. You know, you just want to hang out with the other person. Well, the same is true in our Christian life. You know, the Bible says that love edifies, love builds up. Well, the more we grow in love with Jesus, the more we want to say no to the flesh and those people who would take our time away from Him. We'll exclude those things. We'll exclude those people. We'll break off those engagements because we just want to hang out with Jesus. We just want to spend more time with Him. And the way we fall more in love with Jesus is not through academics, which we love. You know, we love to study the Bible, you know, and glean all that good knowledge and stuff. But the Bible says the way we do it is just by spending time with Him, by opening up our Bibles and just sitting with Him and just enjoying His love and His grace that He's revealed to us through the Scriptures. Verse 9, now while He was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. While Jacob was trying to get these shepherds to get away and leave, we're told that Rachel at this moment walked up when he was talking to them. When Jacob saw Rachel and her sheep, he went up and by himself rolled the stone away and then watered Laban's sheep. Jacob then went on to kiss Rachel. And then he began weeping, and he told her that he was her relative. The reason Jacob kissed Rachel more than likely was because he was her relative. And, you know, Jacob did this because of joy, and that's why he wept. You know, and we also see this joy revealed in the fact that he went over to that large stone and by himself rolled it away. And then he watered all of her sheep. Now, the more we fall in love with Jesus, the more we want to serve Jesus, and the more we want to serve His sheep. And that's what we see here, you know, with Jacob and Rachel. You know, Rachel walks up and he sees, notice it says that he sees Rachel first, and then he sees Laban's sheep. And because of that, he's just, oh, you know, he goes over there and he rolls the stone away, you know, and then he shows off or whatever, you know, and then he waters, you know, her sheep. And the same is true for us. The more we see Jesus, the more we know Jesus, you know, the more we'll have that excitement, that burst to step out and do things that people don't want to do. And we'll do it easily. But also we'll want to serve others because Jesus loves His sheep. And His sheep are always with Him. He's always in the midst of His sheep. And so grow in love with Jesus and you'll grow in excitement and a desire to serve. Now in verses 13 through 30, we see our second section, which is Laban deceives Jacob. Then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him for a month. When Laban heard that Jacob, Rebekah's son, was there, he ran out and embraced Jacob and invited him in. Jacob stayed with Laban and helped out as a hired hand for about a month. He didn't receive any salary. He didn't pay any rent. Because Laban saw that Jacob was such a good worker, you know, and he was a good hired hand, we see the following in verse 15. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? So Laban wanted to keep Jacob around. And so he just bluntly said, okay, hey, listen, you're going to stay here and serve me, and I'm going to pay you. So, you know, what do you want? He gave Jacob first pick. We read in verse 16, now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Laban had two daughters. The older was named Leah, and the younger was named Rachel. We're given a brief description of them in verse 17. We're told that Leah's eyes were delicate. This can also be translated weak. Now, most Bible teachers are, you know, in disagreement on what exactly that means. Most agree that she probably had the same body shape because, as we'll see, Jacob is deceived in thinking that, you know, she is his wife. And so she could have had the same kind of body shape. But concerning her eyes, some say it refers to her maybe having a defect in her eyes, or some even say it could be that her eyes were blue and not brown. And so whatever it is, I don't know, you can do some further research on that, but most commentators and a lot of commentaries are just in disagreement in one of those two categories. Rachel is described as being beautiful in both body and face. Jacob was in love with Rachel, and because of this, he asked if he could serve Laban for 7 years as a dowry in order for Rachel's hand in marriage. And so Laban agreed. He said, sure, hey, why don't you know, I'd rather give her to you than any other guy. Just stay with me and serve me. As you notice, stay with me, he said there. So we see even Laban's motives already. Verse 20, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. This is probably one of the most beautiful verses in the Bible. You know, it shows us the power of God's love, and it shows us the power that love can have in our life towards God, but also just shows us the power of love. Jacob worked 7 years, yet because of his love, you know, this work seems like nothing. Now, this is amazing in looking at exactly what Jacob's job was and exactly who Jacob was working for. I want to give you Jacob's PD in chapter 31, verses 38 through 40. You can flip over real fast. Jacob, kind of out of anger in these verses, kind of tells Laban what his job description actually was in a total of 20 years, but more than likely he had some of these experiences in these first 7 years. Verse 38 of chapter 31, Jacob says, these 20 years I have been with you, your ewes and your female goats, they have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beasts, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. And so Jacob had a hard job. He was an AC mechanic, probably in the valley, you know, in the heat or the cold. No, I'm just kidding. And he's probably working for the prison system because his wages were changed a bunch of times, you know. No, we don't know what, you know. So he was a shepherd, and he had a hard job. It was stressful. He had to take loss for it. You know, the ones that were eaten away, he had to take it. That came out of his salary. You know, but yet he did all of this because of love. He served 7 years, flew by, and then he had to serve 7 more years, as we'll see. And so Jacob had a hard job, but yet, because of his love for Rachel, that time just flew by. He had joy in doing it because he loved the one whom really he was doing it for. Your job or your ministry might be hard, but if you do it unto the Lord and out of love for him, he will give you joy. The Bible tells us, we're actually commanded, do all things unto the Lord. And Chuck, as we read in the Sanctives this week, he says that, you know, we're not to look at the results, but we're to look at the Lord. And if we try to look at people, man, they're just in a, you know, like sheep, you know, they're going to bite us. You know, the wolves are going to come. And so we just need to focus on the Lord. And as a result, we'll have joy in him, and our time will be great. Verse 21, then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpha to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Then why have you deceived me? Now what a horrible thing this was for really three people. First of all, Jacob. You know, I mean, Jacob was deceived. You know, Jacob, on that wedding night, no doubt was very excited. That 7 years he served, of course, just getting there, that's a long engagement, 7 years, you know. And they were actually looked at as married, you know. They're more like a betrothed. And so he's like, man, 7 more years, I can finally go into my wife, you know, who I'm betrothed to. And finally, on his wedding night, you know, he goes in and he wakes up, you know, the next morning, and it wasn't Rachel, it was Leah. What about Rachel? Where was she in this time? We don't know. But, you know, they believe that the father had a lot of control. And so, you know, either he told her just to kind of, you know, hang out, or she didn't know about it. It's kind of hard to, you know, to think that she didn't know about it. And so, you know, interesting. But definitely hard on Leah. Think about that. You know, Jacob was thinking that he was with Rachel that night, you know, and it's just a sad thing. Kind of makes your heart cringe, you know. It's a result of, you know, a sin and deception, you know, and so it's sad. What happened here. Now, some Bible teachers see in this what they call divine retribution for Jacob's deception to his father and Esau. Let me just read to you a quote. This comes from the Bible Knowledge Commentary. They say, and I quote, "The Bible demonstrates over and over the principle that what a man sows, he reaps." Galatians 6:7. Some have called this irony or poetic justice, but it is more than that. It is divine retribution in which there is often a measure-for-measure turn of affairs. God orders the affairs of people to set things right. With Jacob, this deception was perfectly fitted. It was divine punishment to bring his own craftiness before his eyes. He had deceptively presented himself to his father under the guise of Esau, the firstborn. Now Leah, the firstborn, was deceptively introduced to him under the guise of Rachel, the younger. After his initial reaction, Jacob recognized the deception of what it was and accepted it. And so it could have been kind of a reap what you sow thing, maybe in a twofold way. First, naturally, as a result of his, deception, as a result of his working out of the flesh, there was a natural result, which he had to go off and he had to be deceived here, and he had to work all those years as a result of just naturally working things out of the flesh. But also, there could have been a supernatural consequence of judgment. For example, in the life of David, we see that. David committed sin with Bathsheba, and the Lord says, okay, David, you're forgiven. I forgive you, yes. But as a result of your sin, there's going to be consequences. Your baby's going to die. Now, in saying that, it's important to note that God never, leads people to sin, but God oftentimes will allow it in order to test us and in order to teach us. Now listen to what J. Vernon McGee says about Jacob having two wives. He says, and I quote, that is where inspiration comes in. It does not mean that God approved of everything that is recorded in the Bible. Certainly God disapproved of Jacob having more than one wife. May I say to you, there's the quote, he says, this man Jacob had plenty of trouble in his family from here on. And it all can be traced back to his own methods, which he had used. The chickens are coming home to roost. And Laban said, it must not be done so in our country. And so basically, what he's saying here is that, the chickens are coming home to roost. That's a result of his, sin. He's sowing, or he sowed to the flesh. Now he's reaping the results of it. Now, verse 26. And Laban said, it must not be done so in our country, to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will go, and we will give you this one also for the service with which you will serve me still another 7 years. Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah, gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as a maid. Then Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban still another 7 years. And so each daughter both got a handmaid, which we'll see them in the next chapter. Jacob's going to have kids by them. And so Jacob's going to have kids from four women. And as a result, it's going to be some difficult times in the Jacob home. As we'll see next week. But interesting stuff. We see the result of the flesh, ministering out of the flesh. We see the result of sin, which is, you reap what you sow. But nevertheless, God, in His sovereignty, in His love and His grace, because of the promise of Jesus Christ, which was given to Abraham, which was given to Isaac, which was given to Jacob, God is taking this mess and He's working good out of it in order to bring Jesus Christ into the world. This is the promised line of the Messiah. Can God use non-perfect people? Yes, He does. And as you read the genealogy of Jesus Christ, He didn't approve of everything that those folks did in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. But yet, God in His sovereignty and His power is able to use that in order to accomplish His purposes.